welcome to another Directions Magazine podcast. Today we're going to talk about building information models with Mike DeLacy, president of Microdesk. Why is BIM so hot? The answer is simple. Money. The cost savings in moving to BIM are significant. Stay tuned for my interview. Well, Mike, thanks very much for taking the time. Maybe if you could just give a brief background on Microdesk and your current areas of specialty and what you're focusing on, and then we'll get right into some more questions.
Perfect. Okay, so Microdesk is an AEC industry consulting firm. We specialize in helping design, construction, and owner-operators in applying technology to the design and construction process and to the operations and maintenance process. So we work kind of through the whole range of technologies from GIS to CAD, building information modeling, project controls, project management systems, scheduling, and estimating. We're just over 100 people, and we're spread out across 12 offices on the East Coast, 4 offices on the West Coast, and our newest office in Chicago.
Yeah, I know you're primarily an AutoCAD reseller and consultant in that, and using that software solutions. And many people are still using AutoCAD for simple mapping. So how do you perceive the move to more fully convert project information that may have been captured, with AutoCAD to a GIS platform? And does it matter which platform in GIS that they choose?
So I'm not sure that it matters so much which product they choose. I think it's about, beginning with the end in mind, understanding what you're fully trying to accomplish, and then picking the product that's going to be best suited for what that end goal is. So I think the CAD applications on the design side are becoming more and more sophisticated, and they're capturing and allowing us to enter a lot more information in the simple drafting or design process. And I think all of that information flows very nicely through into a GIS environment. So I think that, the predominant players out there being Autodesk on the design side, ESRI on the GIS side, I think it matters what you want to do with it in the end. It matters what scale you're working at. If you're working, at a statewide level, I think that the ESRI products typically fit the bill a little bit better. I think that if you're working at the campus level, or if you're thinking about a facility like an airport, I think it depends on how you really want to use the information after the fact. Is it around planning? Is it around analysis? Or is it largely, being stored and archived for future design purposes, and that will help you make the decision as to whether you go with one over the other?
It seems like in this era where the economy is kind of teetering in some respects, that infrastructure projects are still going to be on the books, and you're going to see a lot of those infrastructure projects leading the way in terms of growth. And I would think that bodes well for your business. But from a more technical nature, there are a lot of people who are doing design projects are moving to 3D mapping and applications of building information models, like you mentioned. How is that transition going, and have people finally bit off on 3D and BIM as a way to take their projects?
So I would say absolutely BIM is becoming a de facto standard, and the purpose for it, I think, is that there is such significant savings in the process by using building information modeling as opposed to traditional 2D design and construction that it can no longer be avoided. We're hearing numbers reported out there in the range of 7% of construction costs being saved by using building information modeling through the design and construction process. We're hearing even larger numbers in the performance of the buildings once they're occupied around energy savings. So I think it is challenging in the design industry to upgrade their software and learn a new process, but I think it's unavoidable at this point based on the savings.
Yeah, but it's funny because, I look at 3D modeling and I don't think it's anything really new. It seems like we've been doing it for years, but maybe that's where the confusion comes in. Can you say what's really different now, or maybe how difficult it is to make that transition? Does that have anything to do generationally with people using the software, or as you said, you see the savings that are so big that you can't avoid moving in that direction?
I don't think it's generational. I think it is. I think it's it's people recognizing that building information modeling is not just a new piece of software or a new way of documenting design intent. It really is it's a process change. It's a methodology. And I think that once an organization understands how building information modeling is changing the design process, the transition becomes much easier. I think that when you look at the products themselves, if you look at a building information modeling product, it is a lot more intuitive and it makes a lot more sense in how you go about documenting design intent. If you compare it to AutoCAD, where we were documenting, you know, a building design using lines, arcs, and circles, building information modeling now gives us the ability to use, you know, walls that react like walls react in the real world, doors and windows and stairs. It does make a lot more sense designing that way. And then the information that gets collected in that model and our ability to analyze that information very rapidly, iteratively throughout the design process makes it a no-brainer. You know, a couple of quick examples are the ability to do conflict detection has probably been the primary driving capability around the move to building information modeling. The fact that we can solve all of these potential design conflicts prior to going into construction is saving tremendous amounts of money. When you move that forward one step and you say, okay, well, what about LEED? What about, you know, building performance? What about carbon footprint analysis? Because we're documenting our design in a building information modeling environment, we can run those analyses iteratively throughout the design process and create very high-performing buildings. So you're seeing the saving, you know, massive savings in construction, massive savings in operations and maintenance, and it's all coupled with an actual better way of documenting that design intent, of getting, you know, what you have in your mind, you know, into something that we can use to build from. It is a methodology change. Again, I think once people understand that and they embrace it, the transition is not horribly complicated.
And so, and to that point about the transition, you know, is there an upfront cost to making that transition? Is there time savings that only realize themselves down the road, but upfront there's some initial work that takes a little bit of time? Can you comment on that?
Sure. So, I mean, of course there is, right? There's always going to be an investment when you're moving to a new technology because you have, obviously, potential software costs. You have training costs. You know, if you're working with a firm like Microdesk, you'll have consultant costs, you know, associated with us being there, helping you through that transition. But, again, I think that, there's extremes. There's the extremes on the good side, extremes on the bad side. But we've had organizations that have taken a holistic view of saying, okay, we realize how important this is. You know, our organization needs to move to building information modeling, and we're going to do it at the corporate level. And then look at the project, not in, you know, the traditional silos of saying, you know, here's what conceptual design is going to cost and how many man hours are going to go into it. Here's design development, construction documentation. They look at the whole project and they say, okay, if we move to BIM and we're going to front load some of those costs where we got to get our people trained, we know we're going to spend more money in the conceptual design stage or in the design development stage. Let's look for ways that we can offset that down the road. And they are able to offset that because doing the carbon footprint analysis, doing the LEED analysis, doing the energy calcs, the load calcs, all of those things can be, we can shrink the time necessary to do all that analysis because we can run the analysis against the model rather than doing it in a separate package completely disconnected from the design. So that ultimately when you look at the project from beginning to end, we were able to recoup, you know, a lot of the expense that we put into the front side of the project.
And now what it seems to be happening is that you're seeing BIM stipulated in RFPs. I know the Army Corps of Engineers has been down the road a couple of years with some of their projects. Are you seeing this more and more that it's being required from the design startup phase that BIM is an absolute requirement in RFPs?
I mean, it is becoming very, very commonplace, and the pace at which organizations are, you know, from at the owner level are adopting and mandating BIM is accelerating very rapidly. You know, to the point where, you know, in New York City, which is my backyard, most of the city and state agencies require it at this point. So the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York, the New York City Department of Design and Construction, the New York City School Construction Authority, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, they all have BIM mandates in place. And the reason for it is, again, that they are recognizing that the technology exists, that they shouldn't have to accept conflicts in construction documentation. You know, at the design level, there should not be errors in the drawings anymore.
So that's interesting. So what do you think? What does it mean for GIS people? This sounds like BIM is more focused on the people who do the design. So down the road, when you get to analytics and operations, what does a GIS person need to be aware of when he takes projects that have been designed with BIM in mind?
So I would suggest that BIM very much focuses on, you know, to date, you know, to where we are in kind of the evolution of things, very heavily used in design and in construction. So at the construction level, we're starting to do fabrication in BIM. We're starting to collect construction information and placing that information back into the BIM model, so that in most situations, at the completion of construction, we have a very accurate virtual representation of what was built. I think that what that means for GIS people is that they have, you know, the most comprehensive set of information they've ever had access to before at the end of construction. So I think that now on the GIS side, it's about the GIS software vendors and GIS professionals learning how to consume that information and deliver it to operations and maintenance staff in meaningful ways. And you're starting to see a lot of that. You know, you see, you know, at the ESRI level, a lot of talk about building information modeling and how do we create geospatial schemas and data models that can consume that information and then allow us to analyze it and use it for operations, maintenance, and planning purposes. If you were to compare it to, you know, what we've traditionally received at that GIS level, you know, we're getting 2D drawings that are lines, arcs, and circles, but it's not all that meaningful. And it makes it very challenging to put it into a data model that makes sense. Now that we're getting, you know, real virtual information that is walls, doors, windows, rooms and floor plates, that's information that from the GIS side we can consume and we can build meaningful data models around.
So what are the considerations for data storage? What kind of spatial database model do people use who are engaging in BIM today?
Today, if we were to think about one of the most common products out there, which is Revit, it is a database model. So Revit is using a single relational database to store its information. It's not, you know, an enterprise spatial database, which is where ultimately I think it does need to go. So if we're thinking about designing a single building and we're storing it in a way that makes the most sense through, you know, for the design environment, ultimately passing that over to construction and allowing construction to use that model in the way that makes the most sense for them. At the end of that process, if what we want to do is we want to be able to distribute that information to an entire organization. If you were to take the Port Authority, for example, and say that there's, you know, 4,000 people within the Port Authority that might want to use that information post-construction, I think that it does need to be in an enterprise spatial database that allows us to distribute it in a number of different ways based on the desired use. So if it's, you know, facility-wide planning at an airport versus somebody who has specific responsibility only for the maintenance of a single building, I want both of those users to be able to use the data seamlessly. I don't want them to perceive any difference, the person that wants to look at the entire airport versus the person that wants to look at a single building. So I think ultimately we will want to have the means to take that as-built building information model, store it in a spatial database, and deliver it out to users based on their need.
It seems like every discussion of software solution can't get away from talking about cloud computing. What's the business model look like for cloud? And I'll just leave it there. What's the business model look like? Does it change given a cloud and SaaS consideration?
Absolutely. I mean, not just as it relates to BIM, right? Cloud is going to change everything. Right now, you're seeing it being implemented by a number of different software vendors in slightly different ways. But as an example with Autodesk is that they're moving a lot of their analyses to the cloud. So they're using kind of a hybrid model where we have, you know, our primary product, in this case Revit, sitting on our desktop or on our internal servers. But when Revit needs to do carbon footprint analysis or energy analysis or rendering or any number of things, all of that is happening in the cloud. We're constantly connected, and we're using the unlimited computing power of the cloud to do some of those computing intensive things like rendering or energy analysis. I think everybody, you know, understands that we're going to move more and more of what we do on a day-to-day basis into the cloud, to the point where I believe, you know, your primary applications, Revit, AutoCAD, Civil 3D, they will all be running in the cloud, and we'll simply log on and use them as necessary. It's obviously going to change the way that we go about purchasing software. We're no longer going to spend, you know, a chunk of money up front to buy the product and install it on our servers. We're simply going to log on and pay for it as we use it on, you know, on cloud-based servers.
Right, and so how does that change your model in terms of being a, you know, have a long-standing relationship with Autodesk of selling lots of licenses? How does that change Microdesk's model if you're moving to a cloud environment?
Sure, I think it, you know, I think in some ways it makes Microdesk more relevant than ever before, because what I think happens when you move to that cloud-based model is I think that the barrier of entry for new technologies becomes very, very small. If you were to think about it in today's world of buying software, design firms, contractors, owners, they have large investments in a particular technology. It makes it very complicated to switch or to, it's even cost prohibitive to even really look and see what else is out there, because the switch is going to be so expensive. When you move to the cloud, all of a sudden that expense associated with switching to a different application goes away, because I can log on, try something, maybe pay $150 or $200 a month to access that new technology. So I think what that means is that there'll be a proliferation of new technologies. Everybody with a good idea will be able to put together a piece of software, make it available through the cloud very inexpensively, and that's going to require that firms have assistance in identifying what is it that they should be looking at. What's real, what's good, what's not good. And I think that that's the role Microdesk plays as a consultant, is helping firms navigate the broad array of technology that's available and help them apply the right technology to the right problem.
And from a user standpoint, do you think they're ready to move in the cloud direction?
I believe that there's going to be a lot of challenges. I think that when you look at the public sector and security reasons, you know, security issues, I think even in big corporate America, when you think of, you know, IT organizations contemplating the fact that all of their data will now be stored offsite and the responsibility for that data is going to be with someone else, I think that, you know, moving the responsibility for mission-critical applications to outside sources, all of those issues need to be dealt with. I think it's going to take some time, but I think it's going to happen, because I think it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways.
Well, Mike, thanks. I really appreciate your time. That's all the questions I've had, and I think that's been a really good overview of what we're faced with in terms of moving to building information models. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was definitely a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on another Directions Magazine podcast. If you'd like to comment about my interview today, please write to me at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tell a friend.